Welcome back to the show, everybody. And this week we have a special guest with us, Ben Fuller. Ben, how's it going?
Hello, I'm well, thank you. How are you?
So I'm fantastic. I think I'm doing a little bit better than you. I think you're probably a little depressed right now because unfortunately the English lost last night to Italy.
I see. I see where this is going. It's now turned into a Let's Roast England podcast. Look, it weren't the result we wanted. But I think going into it, no one would have expected us to get to a final. So the fact that we actually got to a final is a miracle in itself. So I don't think you can be disappointed with that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I said this on the clubhouse we shared together last week, where I didn't expect English or the Italians for that matter, even though Italy did play really well this whole tournament, to make it this far. Hey man, you guys made it to the final. It's better to be said than
made it to the final.
Every other team pretty much, except for Italy. So
that's awesome. Yeah, now next time we just have to go one step further in the World Cup next year.
Yes, exactly. You guys have a really promising young talented squad. I'm pretty sure you guys are gonna do well. So very proud. You should be very proud. So Ben, I'm going to introduce to everybody, and then Ben, you can give your introduction as well. Ben and I are friends. We met on Clubhouse talking about Formula One, and it soon kicked off thereafter. Ben is the main organizer for the fourth largest club on Clubhouse, which is the Formula One Club. And he is the main organizer. You guys will always see him on the panels in Formula One Club. I am an admin with him there, but I don't show up as often because I'm running this show. And yeah, we have more of a friendship, I think, than anything else. But I wanted to bring Ben on the show today for a couple of reasons, to talk about his clubhouse experiences and what he does there, as well as we're going to talk about Formula Fuller later, which is his website and platform that trades and sells Formula One trading cards. So go for it, Ben. Introduce yourself.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me. So yeah, as Ash said, we met on Clubhouse talking Formula One. No surprise there. Both hardcore Formula One fans, I think it's fair to say. And yeah, the whole kind of Clubhouse, you know, it just started off. I had Clubhouse, I think I got it mid-January. I spent a couple of weeks on there, and then like after a week or two, I finally had the courage to go up on stage. And I still remember going on stage for the first time and like speaking to strangers, and I was just like, that just kind of nervousness, I guess. So yeah, that was how that started. And then after probably like another week or two, I thought, you know, I've kind of now got the courage to start my own rooms, and what better things to talk about than something you love like Formula One. And, you know, I still remember like my first ever room. It was like one or two other people. And then it just kind of escalated from there. And then about probably 3 or 4 weeks in, someone we both know well, Jerome, asked to like help out with Formula One Club, because I think at that time it had been established, but they hadn't really hosted any rooms. So yeah, chances are, you've heard my voice if you're on Clubhouse, you like Formula One. So yeah, that's kind of how that started.
That's right. Yeah. And I don't even remember how, I think the first conversation we had together was about the new rules and regs, if I recall correctly. It was in the off season before the season kicked off. And I can't remember who asked me to support or mod, if it was Jerron, which Jerron is now going to be our Twitch host on F1 Geeks, by the way. And Jerron's the founder of the Formula One Club. But I can't remember if it was him or somebody else that was part of that panel that particular week for that conversation, asked me to help with data and research. And that's what I came in with. That was my contribution to that particular conversation. And then from there, it just kind of turned into an awesome friendship first and foremost. And I think we talk often, and this has kind of led to this and Formula Fuller as well. And let's talk about Formula Fuller. I mean, Clubhouse is great, obviously, but really exciting stuff is Formula Fuller for me, because growing up, I was a big trading card guy here in the States. I would buy and trade a ton of basketball, football, baseball, anything sports cards. And now that there's a legitimate market with F1 cards, not like it was in the past, where they were really scarce, and nobody even knew about them. Now it's growing. Talk to us about A, your experience with the trading card market in Formula One, and B, Formula Fuller.
Sure. So first off, I guess I should say that I didn't actually get into the hobby of sports cards properly until last year during the COVID-19 pandemic. I know the whole card culture is very different in the UK and Europe compared to America, where it just seems that everyone kind of trades sports cards. In the UK, I think there's probably like a couple of years during like primary school or like elementary school if you're in the US, where you kind of trade cards. But then after that, you just kind of grow out of it. But yeah, last year, during COVID-19, I've kind of been a supporter and follower of Gary V for a couple of years now, and he was posting a lot of content about sports cards. And I remember when I first like started watching his content, I was like, I'm never getting into sports cards. Like, it's an American thing. I'm never going to do it. And then lo and behold, like 6 months later, I'm now like, I was like surrounded by, I don't know how many cards I had at the time, but say like 15, 20 cards. And like over time, the collection has just grown and grown. So that's kind of how that started. Yeah, I think I was collecting things like Star Wars and other, and I was always kind of hoping and praying that one day Formula One would come along as a sport, well, the sport I love the most. And then luckily enough, a couple of months later, Formula One announced their official partnership with Topps, who is one of the main card manufacturers in the US and the world. And yeah, from there, they're just, you know, they've printed a lot of sets in a short period of time. But I remember the first set that came out, it was only like, it's called Turbo Attacks, which is more of a more accessible, almost set based at the younger years. But I saw it and I just thought, being a kid in me would have loved this if I was 10 again. So I just was like, I'm going to do it. And yeah, from there, Topps have just printed more sets, and it seems to have became more and more of a collectible for me. And then Formula Fuller started. I remember having a conversation with you, Ash. I think you're kind of a bit of a part as to why I started, because I remember saying, like, look, I've got this fascination and hobby. Yeah, we'll give you credit, because not many people will know this. So for historical context, yeah, we'll praise you. But yeah, I remember we had that conversation and I was saying, look, I've got this, like, I enjoy this and this became a bit of a hobby, but I don't know how to make it something I can do on the side and, you know, something I can actually grow. Yeah, I remember we had the conversation. We're like, well, why don't you start, like, you seem to know a lot about them. Why didn't you actually start trying to like buy and sell them and make content around it? And I don't know, it's weird. Like, I think I'd had the thought in the back of my head, but I needed like someone else just to kind of, you know, kind of give me a reality check. And it's like, it's one of those things where sometimes the solution is in front of you, but you don't know it's like staring you in the face.
You need the ignition. Yeah, no. And that's that. When we were having that conversation, I remember I was like, man, you've already got this thing in front of you. You've got the know-how, you've got the ability. And I think the conversation started off with, we were talking about careers and at the stage of life you're at. And we were talking about passion projects and all this stuff. And I was like, operate it as a passion project. Don't put any emphasis into it that this has got to be my business. Just have fun with it. Right. That was, I think and I think that's for a lot of us, like even with me with F1 Geeks, that was my thing. Like, it was always supposed to start off as a passion project, which it's turned into a lot more now, but it was supposed to kick off as a passion and just for me to have fun and find other people in Formula One that I can be with here in the US and enjoy watching races with and stuff like that. But now we have a community around it, which is amazing. But yeah, go ahead, continue. And then what happened? You kicked off a website, which is doing pretty well.
Yeah, so I've been like, Yeah, I had, I don't know at the time how much I had. I had a decent amount that I'd accumulated. So started selling stuff from there. And really just like the whole like Formula One collection market, I guess you could say, is just kind of boomed almost. You know, I think especially in America, because you have that culture a lot more than the UK and Europe. The fact that we have things like Drive to Survive, which has come in, and I know that like the TV records for like the number of live viewers is kind of, I think it's like 130% increase for a recent Grand Prix year on year. So yeah, I mean, I think that has kind of helped the F1 card market. But I think it's great. I don't see, it's kind of hard, but I feel like if you have like a favorite team and a favorite driver, you know, a lot of fans would buy merch to support their team and drivers. I don't now see why you wouldn't want to own like a card or sticker of your favorite driver or team. Just as you could say like a piece of art just to have in your room. Or, you know, it's just something that you can enjoy having and yeah, just show off in your room and show off it to your mates.
Yeah, I agree. So like growing up, I collected, like I have a Kobe Bryant rookie card. I have some really rare like Michael Jordan cards and other things that I collected, which we talked about recently as well. I just rediscovered because I'm in the process of moving my home and I found my old card collection and started going through them. But there's, you know, there's with the F1 cards, it's the same thing. You can find like, isn't there a Lewis Hamilton card that's already worth like $800 or something? I think I heard Tanya say that, one of our other friends on Clubhouse. Yeah. But the point is like, there's already like some value in some of these cards. There's some incredible value. So like for me, we were talking about this earlier where it's a lot of fun to buy boxes of cards and unpack them and open them up. And on the other hand, for me, I also prefer the convenience of going to a website like yours and already finding what I want and just buying it. Even if I pay a small premium, it's worth it for me to do that because I get exactly what I want. Others like to do the unpacking. I used to love to do that. I think it's probably an age thing for me now. If I am at collecting, the other thing is I put them up on the wall, just like you were mentioning, like I'll frame them in a way that it becomes like a focal point or a piece of furniture or something that's like shelf candy. And it's not just packed away in my garage or in my closet somewhere. It becomes like a portrait. So I agree. Do you have any of your favorites up on the wall yet or like hanging out on your desk?
I don't have anything on the wall yet. Mainly because, I don't know, probably because I'm not in my, like, I haven't moved yet. But I'm sure I will in the next couple of years. But nothing's on the wall yet. But let's just say I am kind of surrounded by cards and stickers at this point in time. But yeah, you know, I think I've seen in back of like people's live streams and stuff, they have like those cool like tracks, circuit layouts on the wall. I know some people collect the die-cast models, like the scaled models of the F1 cars or the mini helmets. There's a lot of cool stuff. And like, although that stuff is cool, I just think, why wouldn't you want like a Michael Schumacher rookie card or something like that? And because something like that is a lot more scarce, I think like the value of that item is likely to appreciate over time. I don't know. I think the whole sports card thing is, first of all, you mentioned like the box breaking, the opening packs is fun. Like, why wouldn't you want, like, it's just, yeah, it's just, it's a bit of a calculated risk, but it's that kind of thrill factor. So I think that's one thing that is why sports cards is definitely an area which is growing. Like the amount of Twitch streamers now that you'll see, or even like YouTube, that where they do live box breaks, it's entertainment basically. There's also, you know, like the art side of things. Like if you have a 20, 30 year old F1 card, where the population, say there's only 100 of them in the world, the fact that you own one of those 100, it's almost like you can say to your mates, oh, look at me, I've got one of 100. There's only 100 of these in the world and I've got one of them.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, it's very cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, and you mentioned calculated risk, and I would even argue that it's not risk at all, because like when I was younger, I'd buy cards, open the packs, what I didn't want, I'd actually gift to cousins or friends or whatever that do collect cards or would want them. I wouldn't even trade them sometimes. And so for me, there was pleasure in that. The other thing is, you know, I'm a car guy. I'm down to spend tens of thousands of dollars on cars, and other people will say you're an idiot for doing something like that. It's just a car. It's just designed to get you from point A to point B. So for me, there's the value of an experience is like that worth is, whether it costs you $50 to buy a box or $500 to buy a box, it's worth it if it's worth it to you specifically. And that's the case with a lot of things in life, right? Whether it's hobbies or collections and stuff like that. So, or collectibles. So now you're selling cards right now, and I want to talk about NFTs a little bit. And for those of you that don't know what an NFT is, it's the acronym for non-fungible token, which is a whole nother new world in the digital space of collecting digital, basically, property. And in some cases, it's art, it's pictures, it's designs, graphics, it's or literally moments. And I think the most notable and I guess the thing that's leading the path for NFTs right now is the NBA, which they're selling these moments in NBA history that are basically like digital trading cards effectively. But in the case of the NBA and these NFTs for the NBA, it's like a play that happened where LeBron is dunking, and it's this digital moment that you collect in like effectively a digital wallet or a digital, what would you call it? What do they call them? It's not called a digital wallet, is it? I can't remember what they
I mean, you'd have it in your wallet. So yeah, terminology.
Yeah. So, but talk to me about your now like obsession starting to grow for the NFT space. And do you plan on taking Formula Fuller into the NFT space?
No, you joke about the obsession, but
I know, like, I know it's a real thing.
Probably like the past couple of months, like I've kind of slowly been gaining traction in the sense that I'm finding myself spending a lot more time on some of these NFT marketplaces.
Yeah, our creative director here, Gage, I don't know if you've met Gage yet, but our creative director Gage is all about the NBA NFTs. He collects them, and he's a huge NBA nerd. So yeah, anyway, continue.
Yeah, I've spent a lot more time recently, going onto these marketplaces. And, you know, actually, I think similar to sports cards, similar to Clubhouse, like the community aspect and like the people is what makes it so enjoyable. In the past couple of weeks, I've joined probably four or five new Discord communities and just kind of diving in, finding out about new projects and just like the people behind it. And it's just, I just enjoy, finding like these new potential communities that people don't know about yet. And it's just like almost the hunt of trying to find the next thing that hasn't happened yet. I really enjoy that aspect. I think NFTs are here to stay. Admittedly, we're still very early in this process and it's not going to change overnight, but I think we'll look back in 10 years and things will be a lot more different. I know Gary Vee, for example, compares this to like social media 2005, 2006. And obviously we've came a long way in social media from back then. So if we look 10 years into the future, then what it could be. I think the reason why NFTs work, a couple of reasons. First of all, it's the art aspect. Like as humans, we love to kind of show off, and that's like how we communicate almost. It's like, for example, if someone comes to your office and you've got an F1 helmet or an F1 poster, for example, we almost express our personalities through what we own. So in the future, you know, we'll have our wallets and I can look in your wallet and I might see that you've been to the F1 Grand Prix in Miami for 3 years straight. And I instantly know that you're a Formula One fan and that you probably live somewhere in America because you've been to Miami. And if I'm thinking to go, I want to go to Miami, I might message you and be like, oh, hey, I see you've been to Miami for the past 3 years. Like, can you give me some tips, or like, what, like, yeah, what's the best things to do? Like, can we even go together? I think people will make new friendships through what they own in their wallets.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And what you were mentioning about what Gary Vee was saying, this is the infancy of kind of the future market for future generations. And I've had this conversation with some older generations, even people in my generation. So I'm in my late 30s and I was born in the early 80s. And even my friends don't all necessarily understand how this is going to work and why somebody would want something digital over something tangible. But you kind of nailed it. I think there's a human factor of A, wanting to have something that could be exclusive or unique in terms of art, right? And we do love to show off. There's a status involved with, I think, with when people do show off. And you know, showing off is twofold. Like, I'm not talking about showing off in a negative way, but people like to show people they have a particular thing or whatever it is they're doing. I mean, that's the success of social media, right? Look at me, look what I'm doing, look what I have, blah, blah, blah. So NFTs, I don't think are going anywhere, and they're only going to be growing. And I think you're right. It's going 5 years from now, even it could be as early as that. We're not even going to, the conversation isn't going to be had about whether they're here to stay. It's going to be a new market. Just like Bitcoin was this huge, like, why would you invest in something that doesn't exist? How can you invest in digital currency? And look at it now, it's worth $33,000 a coin. So like go ahead.
I think like the whole pandemic thing, like technology, we were more and more using technology in our lives, but I think the whole pandemic has definitely accelerated that to a point where, I mean, I was fortunate enough to still be working, but I guess for a lot of people, they were working online, they were doing Zoom meetings, for example, and were spending more and more time on their laptops, computers, phones in that digital space. And I know a lot of people, it's either a case of we're either living in the real world or we're living in the digital world. But I know Gary would say, like, it's both. Like, you have to obviously find your balance, but it's both. And one of the things that made it click for me about NFTs, as well as, like, there's so much you can go into, like the access that you could go into. You know, if you own a token, then it gives you access to a conference for 3 years, for example. That's cool. It's basically like a digital ticket, which you can then keep.
Yeah, people are tying other, just to kind of build on that, you can tie, in this case, like experiences to them or other assets to them, or ownership rights access in this case.
For example, to put it into like motorsport and Formula One terms, what would someone pay to have a digital token, but then attached to that token, for example, you got to go to a British Grand Prix, you got to hang out in McLaren's garage for a weekend, you got to meet Lando and Ricardo, and like, I don't know what else, but you know, you kind of have to sell the experience attached to the token, and how much then is that worth? And obviously, like, the market will decide what value they think it's worth, but I think a lot of it is having a community and then trying to bring your audience as much value and really sell the experience. And I think this will lead to allow creators and influencers to, and even like companies with the audience that they have, to give them a level of access, which is unprecedented. And I'm really excited to see what some of these companies do, because
yeah,
you can just let your creativity run wild, basically.
Yeah, no, I'm excited too. I think it's going to take us into new, especially for experiences. It's going to take us into a whole new world for experiences. It's going to raise the bar dramatically, and it's like the next big thing for sure. So as far as Formula Fuller is concerned with NFTs, do you have any plans in the near future? Are you going to start trying to create your own collectibles or items, or are you going to start to trade, set up a platform to try to trade and sell NFTs on there, incorporate this it is, with some of the existing? Is this something going on? Yeah, you're smiling. So.
Look, I had a thought in my mind that if I can make this a long-term thing and make it sustainable, then it only makes sense to, if I have a platform where physical collectibles are traded and sold, then it only makes sense to then do the same with digital collectibles, because both worlds basically go hand in hand, so to speak. So I haven't thought about making any NFT projects yet, because like I say, we're so early in this, but I'm definitely doing a lot of learning, meeting some like amazing people, and we'll just wait and see what happens. I'm kind of hoping that Formula One will eventually release a project. I don't care, like, it doesn't have to be like next month. I'd rather they say give it a couple of years, do it well, than to like rush it and to do it badly. And I know that, for example, Formula One have now got their partnership with crypto.com, as do Aston Martin. Last week, Alfa Romeo came out with their fan token, which is basically you can buy said token, and then by owning that, you can then earn rewards and stuff from it. So I think a lot of the teams and people in F1 are playing around with the idea, but like I say, we're so early in this that like there's no real blueprint as to what's the right way to do it and what's the wrong way to do it. So everyone is just learning.
Only a matter of time before F1 adopts it. It's not, I don't think it's so much of a question of if they will, right? It's when they will. It's, and every sport, for every, not just sports too, but a lot of markets, it's going to offer, like you said, a lot of new experiences and accessibility and to the world. Do you want to add something?
I was just going to add like another point. I mean, this is going to sound hard to say, but I've never actually been to a Grand Prix yet. That's going to change. Don't worry about it. But I know a lot of people that go to Grand Prix like to keep, or even if you go to like a concert, for example, like a concert, a Grand Prix, any kind of experience like that, people like to keep their tickets as almost like a souvenir, or like as a memory, right? They put it in their like box where they keep all the other stuff, and it's like you can look back at it in the future and be like, oh, I remember that moment. Like, it's so cool. That could be digitalized with NFTs, and I think that's like another cool thing they could do. I know I said this like the other night in a Clubhouse room, but or use Miami again as an example, that, you know, say for a Miami Grand Prix, if the ticket to the Grand Prix is an NFT, you could have that designed by a local artist. And obviously it doesn't have to be necessarily look like a ticket, it can be anything, but that could be designed by a local artist. By you then owning that token, that gives you admission to the Miami Grand Prix for a weekend. And then afterwards, you then get to keep that token in your wallet, either as like a souvenir, and then, you know, your friends can see, like I said earlier, that, oh, you've been to Miami Grand Prix, that's cool. Like, tell me about that experience. Or if you decide, you may decide in the future that actually it was cool, but I no longer want to keep it and I want the money or something, and someone's willing to pay $50, $100 for it. So yeah, it's kind of a win-win on all sides.
Yeah, I agree. And then there's the other thing where you like to showcase where you are and how many times you've been to those places. And some of these NFT tickets have the ability to basically, you have a ticket and just like, you can say, what's it called? Like medals. I have, these aren't necessarily medals, but, medals like on a military shirt or the scouts, like when you've achieved something or awarded something, you can get different emblems basically stamped onto your digital NFT that showcases which years you came and so on. And that becomes of value too. And it acts as a reward system to some degree for some NFTs also, to where the more you buy in this range. Yeah. But so to some degree, I want to move away a little bit from NFTs because I want to talk to you about Silverstone also and some F1 and get your opinion on some things that are happening. So we got the British Grand Prix coming up this weekend. Last year, we had two races here during quarantine. Both were hell of exciting considering, especially the Mercedes dominance and Lewis's dominance last season. Red Bull was the team that challenged them here last year. And now we're coming back and Red Bull's the team to beat. Is there any chance that Mercedes can take the fight to them this weekend?
I mean, I'd Toto have to
said,
say,
I don't know if you saw Toto's comments last week, but Toto said they're going to come here and they're going to take a 1-2 30 seconds ahead of the competition.
Right. Okay.
How much do you believe in that, first of all?
I mean, I don't see that happening. I don't see even 30 second domination. I think they have to bounce back here. I think this is a very pivotal moment in the season. I think we're two races away from the summer break. Historically, this has been a Mercedes track. I believe that since 2014, Lewis Hamilton has won every race in Silverstone bar one, where I think Max Verstappen won the 70th anniversary Grand Prix last year. So, yeah, this is a Mercedes track and they need to have a strong showing here. Because otherwise, you'd expect Red Bull to be strong and hungry. So, you know, before the summer break, you need to start getting the points back in. That being said, I think Mercedes have been a bit unlucky. You know, obviously they had the incident with Bottas in Monaco and Hamilton going straight on in Baku. And put it this way, although Verstappen is ahead in the championship and Red Bull are as well, it could quite easily be the other way. I think it is that close, but it could quite easily be the other way. But yeah, I think Mercedes need to have a very strong weekend. And I kind of hope that with Silverstone being at full capacity, I think it's 160,000 fans, and that's going to be electric. Jealous, I need to go. But yeah, hopefully that'll give Lewis an extra couple attempts. I don't know. The drivers always say that, don't they? They say the fans kind of give them an extra couple attempts. So yeah, hopefully he can get the win there. But, you know, sprint qualifying, it's going to be the first time I've seen sprint qualifying this weekend. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. I was watching one of Will Buxton's videos earlier, and he said, if Lewis and Verstappen take each other out on the sprint race, then they both start from 19th and 20th in the actual feature race. So a scenario like that would be crazy to see both of those drivers going through a field. Sprint race, Pirelli are bringing more robust tires to this weekend, and also the British summer. I don't know, it's a bit weird. Some days it's nice, other days it's overcast, and the next minute it's chucking it down. So
don't be surprised
if there's a bit of rain as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say British summer is a bit of an oxymoron.
You never know what you're
going to
get.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so I want to touch up on a couple of things that Ben mentioned. Number one, Pirelli is bringing a new rear construction of tires to this race in sight of what happened at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix with the rear tires failing on the Aston and the Red Bull. So these ones will probably assist Mercedes, who is not good on rears. And so the integrity of these tires is going to be higher. The other thing is Britain in general, as we saw last year, Silverstone is it puts a lot of stress on tires. The abrasion level of the surface of the track is not that high. It's only ranked at a 3 out of 5. So it's kind of in the mid range, but it has a lot of stress on the tires because it has a lot of fast corners, specifically maggots and Beckett's. Both sections are like 5G full throttle cars on lateral force is like an intense amount of physics. Pirelli is bringing the hardest compounds of the Pirelli tire family, the C1, the C2, the C3 this weekend. So long stints, I imagine, will be slated for Red Bull, as they've been showing to do really well. Max has done really well in that regard. And they have Sergio, who's notoriously good at long stints. We saw them do long stints here last year as well, which was what led to the tire failures initially, but, hopefully that's cured now. And let's talk about quickly about the sprint qualifying format. Although we're going to be talking about it in much more detail later this week, I will bring this up now. Friday is your traditional qualifying round. So everybody who's tuning in to watch this race this weekend, Friday is going to be your traditional Q1, Q2, Q3 format. And they're going to be whatever they qualify in Q2. Unlike traditional qualifying, they don't have to start on those tires in the sprint race on Saturday. Saturday's sprint race will be determined by the traditional qualifying on Friday, but it's likely going to be a no stopper. It's likely going to be whatever they start with, they're going to finish with. They have to do a third of the race distance. That's the formula. So in this case, I think it's like 100K, 100 kilometers. Yeah. So for what I read was for some races, that means it's going to be a 25-minute sprint race. For others, it could be up to about 40 minutes, depending on the circuit and the distance and the range. So it's going to be, on paper, it looks like it could be a lot of fun because we get to watch Friday, we'll be watching qualifying. Saturday, we'll be watching a mini race, and Sunday we get to watch. So we have a full weekend of watching. They only get one free practice on Friday before qualifying. Then they get a technically FP2 on Saturday morning before the sprint race. Parc Fermé conditions actually go into place after Q1, Q2, Q3 on Friday. And there's small adjustments that they can do on the cars on Saturday before the sprint race, before they go back into full Parc Fermé again for the main race on Sunday. So that's tip. That's the sprint qualifying format that we're going to be seeing. What are your thoughts on sprint races? Is this look, are you kind of torn? Are you excited to see it? Or are you just like, you think this is just blah, just another gimmick?
You know what? Initially I was, what's the word? I was tentative. I wasn't sure. Maybe a bit skeptical. I wasn't sure. But the more and more I've kind of like looked into it, I actually think it could be an interesting dynamic. I think it will be better than when they tried elimination qualifying. I don't know how long that was ago, like 5 or 6 years ago. I think it'll be better than that. I actually think it will be good. And I'll tell you why. First of all, in qualifying, drivers go flat out. So I think that's a good thing. They're in the soft tires. They go as fast as they can. None of this like trying to start with a medium tire. Like that's out the window. Secondly, there's less practice. I believe there's only 2 60-minute practice sessions. So there's less practice. That's a tick in my box because I think historically less practice means less data, means we get more unpredictable races. So I'm happy about that. I guess from the fan side, if you go to a races, then and if you go for a whole weekend, then there's more to see. Basically, there's an added race in there. You get to watch qualifying on Friday. It just kind of, it seems like the race weekend is kind of spread out a bit better. And I think finally, the whole risks versus reward dynamic. There's 3 points available for first, 2 points second, 1 point for third. So, you know, if you're getting Max versus Lewis at the front, for example, like how much risk are they willing to take? Because, you know, if they'd like touch wheels or something and one of them ends up getting a puncher, then they're starting at the back of a grid for the main race. So it's going to be interesting. And especially in the midfield as well. I imagine in the midfield, maybe some drivers may take more risk. But it's going to be very interesting to watch, I think.
Yeah, I like it on paper. I think it has potential. I don't know if it's going to play out every single time they would do a sprint race. Like if they were to do this for the entire calendar year, I don't know that it would always play out to be highly entertaining, right? I think it's all circumstantial. So, but I'm glad they're trying it. I'm glad they're trying something new. It's always fun to see something progressive. And why not? Like they're only doing it at 3 races. The next one we're going to see this at is Monza in Italy. And there's a 3rd race that we're going to see it at. I can't remember if they've dubbed it yet. It was initially Canada, but then they removed it from Canada. And then they said maybe Brazil.
I think Brazil is a bit like, we don't know if that's going to happen or not, do we?
So exactly. So I can't remember if they'd already labeled another race yet. That's something I'll look into before the next podcast and I'll confirm. But yeah, it's definitely going to give us a packed weekend even at home if we're not even at the races, because now we have 3 days of potential content to watch, which is great. So we'll see what happens. Predictions, what do you think is going to happen in overall? Who's going to win the race? Forget, let's pretend the sprint, because it's going to be so hard to predict what's going to happen in quality, then sprint race, then blah blah blah. What do you think overall on Sunday, if everything goes to what we've normally seen this season, who do you think's the team to beat?
Okay. Catch me on the spot here. I think Lewis will win Silverstone. I kind of hope he does. I think Lewis will win Silverstone. I think Perez will come second, and I think we could see Lando Norris on the podium at his home race, which I think everyone would love to see. He's just been doing such great performance recently, and I think everyone would love to see that.
What happened to Max? in your vision?
See, I haven't included him because I think something's going to happen to him. I think either reliability issue, or potentially he may get tangled up in the main race or in the sprint race. I don't know. I think something's going to happen to Max, and then, you know, it's whatever happens, it's going to sway in Lewis's favor and bring the championship back closer again.
I hope that's what happens. Everything you just said, because that sounds way, way more exciting than what I would have said.
And the only thing I forgot to add is that potentially maybe George Russell may get announced to Mercedes this weekend.
Hey-o. Yeah, there's rumors floating.
There's always rumors.
Yeah, and you saw like the post he had on social media yesterday with take care of the things you love, and it was a picture of him washing his Mercedes.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And then he also posted about how much he wants to race with and against Lewis. And he's really happy that Lewis signed for 2 years. And so there's a lot of people reading really deeply into a lot that's going on, maybe too deeply, but in some instances, I believe there's some truth to it.
It's one of those where, from a marketing point of view, like announcing George at Mercedes at the British Grand Prix makes 100% sense. Like, you know, they'll get a lot of traction from that, and also it would allow Bottas time to find another seat, whether that be in a Williams, for example, or if he chooses to go elsewhere outside of Formula One. The only negative I found to if they do announce it this weekend is then does that change Valtteri's mentality? And, you know, Mercedes is still in a title fight with Red Bull. Does he then kind of lose that kind of extra, you know, kind of kick he gets from eating his porridge? I don't know. yeah, but I think that's like the only negative as to how that then affects Valtteri if they did announce it so early on in the season. I think that's the only reason why they'd kind of keep it till the end of the season or till after this, after the championship's finished.
Yeah, that's good points. It's such a hard, like Toto and company have to juggle something very sensitive right now, which is they're behind the Red Bull. The car is not as good. The situation isn't as good for them because they're behind in points. Max is on firing on all cylinders, driving better than he ever has. Red Bull's, again, we just said, has the advantage. And in the last race, for example, we saw them give Valtteri the okay to pass Lewis. And which isn't good for Lewis's championship, but they were in a position in that race where I think made sense because they were so far behind and there was so much left in the race still that it made no sense to keep Valtteri behind them because he was likely going to get caught up by Lando at that point if they were going to do that anyway and then risk losing position to another driver for both drivers, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, damage.
There it was, yeah, the damage control factor. So in this race, though, we'll see what happens and what plays out. But if they find themselves in another position where they have to, they need Valtteri to, Valtteri hasn't been a driver in the past to disobey, right? So they probably have it in their favor, even if they did announce it, because Valtteri also has to look to where is his role going to be in the future at what team. And within that team specific role, if he starts to disobey so publicly and harshly, does that then play an effect on whoever's signing him next to say, well, if he's going to be that abrupt and bluntly out of line, do we want him here as well? And, or does, you know, cause people remember, like they always say, your last race is what's remembered, or you're only as good as your last race. So people aren't going to remember that he was a gentleman for 5 years. They're going to remember.
That's true.
Was he a gentleman in his last race? So does he consider that? Who knows? We'll see. And we'll see what happens, what plays out. Yeah, I'm excited. I think this is going to be, I'm always excited and I always say that, but this is going to be really cool to see the sprint races. I'm really excited to see the sprint races. I'm a little more excited, I think, than most people. I do believe they do have an ability to play a big role in entertainment level, but it's going to be circumstantial. The cool thing is that Friday's kind of like they're all going to be on reds going as fast as they possibly can and pushing as hard as they can and not worrying about trying to keep those reds together in Q2. So, and then the same thing in the sprint race. I think the guys in the mid pack will probably be pushing harder, taking bigger risks. And so that could play a role in how things play out up front as well. The Sergio Perez's, the Valtteri Bottas's, and the Charles Leclerc's and the Lando Norris's in the sprint race, I think will be wildly exciting to watch. I think Lewis and Max will be a little more conservative because of what you said. They don't want to put themselves in a position since they're so far ahead of everybody else and fighting for a championship. So, but I think that's cool because if Sergio takes an added risk or if Lando takes an added risk against Sergio, for example, and takes Sergio out, Red Bull then has one car up front and they can't play with strategy to defend for Max. And so that could play into Mercedes' hands and same vice versa. Valtteri doing the same thing, taking an added risk and giving Red Bull another advantage. So it's, again, on paper, really exciting. Let's see what happens. Before we end this show, I want to mention that for Formula Fuller, go ahead and plug the website URL really quick.
FormulaFuller.com.
So anybody who shows up on FormulaFuller.com between now and the end of the month and uses the code F1 Geeks, it's a discount code that we're going to have for everybody. You'll get a 20% off on any of the cards and assets that Ben is selling on there. So F1 Geeks is the code. Type it in, go get some stuff. I've already bought some stuff and I'm going to buy more. So get there before me, before I collect them all. And Ben, awesome having you on the show. I do hope you come back. I'm sure you're going to come back. We're going to have you on probably more shows in the future. Yeah. And maybe we'll have you as a regular plug-in on the co-host side. Not just talking about Formula Fuller, but we will. We'll talk about Formula Fuller some more as well. Sure. Thanks for showing up. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry England didn't win it. But hey, man, you have another shot this weekend. Like you said, Lando's on point. Lewis is on point. So, and hey, Red Bull's, I mean, they're all based in England pretty much anyway, every team. So Silverstone is kind of like the home race for Formula One, more or less. So it's pretty cool. British Grand Prix, everybody enjoy it from wherever you're watching in the world. And I hope to see you all again soon. Ciao.